Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Changes in the Land Indians, Colonists, and the Ecology of New England is a nonfiction work of environmental history by William Cronin, first published in 1983. The book examines colonial New England not only as a site of cultural encounter, but as an ecological system reshaped by different ideas about property, labor, settlement, and resource use. Cronin compares indigenous and English relationships to land, showing how legal definitions of ownership influenced forests, wildlife, agriculture, and patterns of human movement. He also uses an interdisciplinary method that combines historical records with ecological evidence to reconstruct environmental change over time. The book is important because it helped establish environmental history as a major field and offered a model for studying how human societies and natural systems develop together. Rather than treating nature as a fixed backdrop to colonial history, Cronin presents it as something actively shaped by historical choices and economic structures. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Cronin's central argument property regimes reshaped the New England environment. The book's core claim is that the transition from indigenous to English dominance transformed New England ecologically as well as politically. Cronin argues that English colonists brought a land ethic grounded in private property, commodification, and permanent occupation, while indigenous peoples generally understood land through usufruct rights, which allowed use of resources without treating the land itself as a saleable object. This difference mattered because it shaped how people cleared forests, hunted, farmed, and organized settlements. English property boundaries encouraged enclosure, resource extraction, and market-oriented development, all of which accelerated environmental change. By contrast, indigenous systems were tied to seasonal use and more flexible movement across landscapes, which helped maintain a different ecological balance. Cronin does not claim that native peoples lived outside environmental change. Rather, he shows that their land use was structured differently and produced different kinds of impact. The point of the argument is that ecological transformation was not accidental. It followed from legal and economic ideas about ownership, which made the landscape increasingly stable for settlers, but more depleted and simplified in ecological terms. Secondly, an interdisciplinary method that joins history with ecological reconstruction. One of the book's most influential features is its method. Cronin openly explains that environmental history requires evidence drawn from multiple disciplines because no single archive can fully recover past ecosystems. He combines colonial documents such as town records, court disputes, and travelers' accounts with ecological research that includes tree rings, pollen, charcoal deposits, and other material traces studied by historical ecologists. This approach allows him to move beyond a purely narrative history of settlement and instead reconstruct long-term environmental patterns. It also makes the book intellectually significant because it models how historians can work with scientific evidence without abandoning historical interpretation. Cronin is careful about uncertainty. He does not present ecological reconstructions as perfect or complete, but as reasoned inferences from fragmentary sources. That caution is part of the book's strength. It acknowledges that environmental change cannot be understood through ideology or economics alone, and that physical landscapes leave evidence of their own history. The result is a method that links human behavior to measurable ecological change, while still keeping culture, law, and economy at the center of analysis. Thirdly, seasonality, mobility, and the different logic of indigenous and colonial settlement. Cronin places unusual emphasis on seasonality because it helps explain why indigenous and European societies used the same region in very different ways. Indigenous communities in New England often moved in response to the seasonal availability of fish, game, and plant foods, which meant that mobility was an essential part of survival and land use. European colonists, by contrast, aimed to create permanent settlements, store food through winter, and maintain a more fixed agricultural order. That difference changed the landscape. Permanent towns required fields, fences, livestock, timber, and repeated clearing, all of which intensified pressure on forests and wildlife. Cronin argues that this was not simply a question of one group using resources more efficiently than another. It was a clash between two systems of ecological adaptation. Seasonal mobility was often misread by Europeans as poverty or disorder, but in Cronin's account, it was a rational strategy suited to the environment. Likewise, European settlement was not merely a cultural preference. It was an environmental commitment to permanence that carried real ecological costs. This focus on seasonality gives the book analytical depth because it links daily survival practices to large-scale landscape change. Fourthly, colonial capitalism and the conversion of abundant land into a wasteful landscape. Another major theme is the relationship between capitalism and environmental degradation. Cronin shows that colonial New England was not transformed only by population growth or agricultural expansion. but by market incentives that encourage settlers to treat land and resources as commodities. Timber, furs, livestock, and agricultural products became part of wider commercial systems, and that commercialization altered how people valued forests, animals, and open land. The book's famous closing logic is that abundance can produce waste when people assume resources are limitless and when property systems encourage extraction rather than stewardship. Cronin's description of the people of plenty being a people of waste summarizes this critique. The point is not merely moral condemnation. It is an analysis of how economic structures reward short-term gain and normalize environmental depletion. He connects this to the English tendency to reorganize land into exclusive holdings and to prioritize market production over local ecological limits. In this framework, environmental damage is inseparable from colonial development. Capitalism does not appear as a separate theme added onto the history of settlement. It is one of the mechanisms through which the land itself was changed. Lastly, a foundational and debated work in environmental history. Changes in the land became influential because it offered a powerful way to write colonial history without separating human affairs from ecological change. It is widely credited with helping launch environmental history as a distinct field, and it remains a standard text in courses on colonial America, Native history, and environmental studies. Its lasting value comes from the clarity of its argument, the range of its evidence, and its insistence that landscapes have histories shaped by human institutions. At the same time, the book has also generated criticism. Some readers argue that its contrast between wasteful Europeans and environmentally balanced indigenous peoples can seem too sharp, even if Cronin is more nuanced than that summary suggests. Others question whether ecological inference sometimes goes beyond what the sources can firmly prove. These debates are part of the book's significance, because they show how ambitious its claims are. Cronin did not just describe a colonial region. He changed the terms for thinking about colonization, ecology, and ownership together. That combination of accessibility, methodological innovation, and interpretive reach explains why the book continues to matter decades after publication. In conclusion, Changes in the Land should be read by students and scholars of environmental history, colonial America, Native American studies, historical ecology, and the history of land use. It is also useful for readers interested in how legal and economic systems shape landscapes over time. The book offers more than a colonial case study. It provides a method for thinking about the relationship between culture and environment, showing that ideas about property, mobility, labor, and resource ownership have ecological consequences. That makes it valuable both intellectually and practically, especially for anyone trying to understand the historical roots of land conflict and environmental change. What sets it apart from many other works in the same genre is its combination of narrative clarity and interdisciplinary ambition. Cronin does not treat nature as a passive background, and he does not reduce history to economics alone. Instead, he reconstructs a specific region through both archival evidence and ecological reasoning, producing a model of environmental history that is grounded, influential, and still widely debated. Its lasting distinction lies in showing that colonization was also a transformation of ecosystems, not only a transfer of power. If you would like to support William Cronin, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.